Okay, our next speaker this morning is Dr. Tom Clark, who is the epidemiology team leader in the meningitis and vaccine preventable disease branch in NCIRD. Dr. Clark is trained in pediatrics and preventive medicine. He joined CDC in 2001 and became the epidemiology team leader in 2006, in time for the decrease from the last pertussis resurgence. And the licensure of Tdap vaccine, which was expected to either blunt or even eliminate the regular and increasing 3 to 5 yearly resurgences of pertussis. As we all know, the major resurgences in California and other states last year have changed this expectation and presented Dr. Clark and his team with a challenge of defining the epidemiology of the resurgence, why this change has occurred, and how we may need to refine prevention for pertussis in the future. And so I welcome Tom to give us an update on pertussis epidemiology and program update.
Thank you, Steve. Thanks, everybody. So I think you'll see some similar themes from this talk to mine, the previous talk to mine, although we're at 6 doses and counting. So. First things first, I would say thanks, because I'm not as good at this as I should be, say thanks to everybody in the audience who has monitored and reported and responded to pertussis this year, and of course to everybody at the team, on the team at CDC, and those we recruited onto the team to work on pertussis this year. I think it's kept us busy. I would also, I guess, want to ask if you have enjoyed your scavenger hunt. You didn't realize we were going to send you to 6 or 8 different sessions to get one clue about what the heck's going on with pertussis this year in the U.S. And so for those of you who don't like it, this is a spoiler alert. This is kind of the cliffhanger. I might not answer all of your questions. So if you're disinclined, you can probably still get to the session on creative ways to bring money back to your health departments. Okay, but first, you know, we have enjoyed a 90% reduction in the occurrence of pertussis from 200,000 cases a year to 20,000. And so that's a tremendous advance, but it's not a 99 or 100% reduction like we've seen for other vaccine-preventable diseases. Just to quickly orient you, you know the childhood immunization schedule, but to remind you that we switched from wholesale vaccines to acellular vaccines in the 1990s, beginning with, in 1992, with changes in the 15 to 18-month-old booster dose and 4 to 6-year-old booster dose to AP vaccines. And then in 1997, the complete schedule was changed to AP vaccines, with some period of a few years in which we transitioned. And then, of course, we have an adolescent adult booster dose recommended and preferred at 11 or 12 years of age. Oops, I also can't go in the right direction. We've enjoyed high and sustained vaccine coverage for the childhood series for many years. So 95% and better for 3-plus doses in 19 through 35-month-olds, 85% or better for 4-plus doses, but with quite a bit of catch-up by school entry. We, I guess, are nothing if not nostalgic in public health. We like to go back to, I guess, the bad old days and remind you how bad pertussis used to be. But also this slide sort of shows you that we've seen an increase in incidence since the 1980s. The inset shows you the 2004-05 outbreak years of 25,000 cases each, and then a hint at what happened in 2010. This is a map of states divided into quartiles of incidence. The overall incidence in 2009 of pertussis was 5.5 cases per 100,000, and quite a lot of variability from state to state. And then 2010, you know, we acknowledge the uniqueness of every state, but unfortunately, California is not unique in its pertussis incidence. Several other states had comparable, if not slightly higher, incidence. And then the cautionary note about this map is that there are delays in reporting. So California is in the sort of third quartile, not the fourth yet, because they're so busy cleaning up their reporting and finalizing reporting. So the 21,000 cases provisionally in 2010 will go up nationwide. Infants have always been at highest risk for pertussis. They're also at greatest risk for severe fatal pertussis. The rest of the graph is age-specific incidence. And I'll just focus on, for now, around 2005. The yellow bars, 11 to 19-year-olds, really in 2000 through that 2005 peak, really took off, and to a lesser degree, adults. So there was an increasing incidence in that age group to which we responded with a Tdap vaccination recommendation. This is just a little bit better. This is proportion of cases among all cases reported in each year among age groups. And you'll see a pretty substantial increase in adolescents beginning in the late 90s and a little bit to a lesser degree, but also an increase in adults around 2000. So increasing coverage among adolescents with Tdap, 55.6% among 13 to 17-year-olds in the last NIS teen survey. So getting better. We have data on the effectiveness of Tdap from a number of studies, the pre-licensure studies based on immunogenicity suggested 85 to 89% effectiveness, or the original APERT study looking at the acellular, reduced dose acellular vaccine suggesting 92%. And then subsequent to implementation and use, 78% effectiveness estimated in Australia using the screening method. And then two studies that we've done at CDC and an outbreak in St. Croix, 65%. And then in collaboration with the Minnesota Department of Health, 72%, both among adolescents, sort of one outbreak and one population-based. So as Steve said, we had the good fortune of implementing Tdap at the decline of pertussis incidence in the usual cycles. And so rather than just take credit for it, though, we did try to show an impact. And this is work done by our group. The green line is there's a rate ratio. So it's the rates of pertussis among adolescents relative to the rates among all other age groups. And you'll see a gradual increase from 1990. The yellow line is just the plotted line showing the slope. Subsequent to implementation of Tdap, a statistically significant change in slope and a decline in incidence. So really suggesting an impact of Tdap among adolescents. Unfortunately, we don't really see an impact in other age groups. So same curve, drawing your attention to the kind of orange-red line this time. And you'll see again from the incidence, we've blunted the increase this cycle in adolescents, but the 7 to 10-year-olds took off. So this is the proportion of all cases of pertussis. This is the proportion of all cases of pertussis in 7 to 10-year-olds reported over the years, and historically it's been 5 to 10%, and then 2007 or so began to take off to about 20, 25% of all reported cases. And then kind of a similar analysis with rate ratios showing a pretty flat occurrence in that age group, and then a statistically significant increase. This looks at cases of pertussis by year of life over several years. So 2002, 2003, 2004, you'll kind of see a generally downslope from infants to 8-year-olds, and then about 9 years of age, the case counts would go up again. And then in 2005, there's a little blip in the 7-year-old cohort. And we'll kind of follow them through. They increase, so they're now 8 in 2006, they increase 9 in 2007, and then 10 in 2008, again an increase. And this substantial sort of stair-step emergence of disease in this age group. And then as they turn 11 in 2009 and get Tdap, that seems to be blunted. So this had us concerned this past year, and this is the, you'll of course recall that the main thing that's changed about this group is that they're the first to get all AP vaccines in the face of a pertussis outbreak. And so that was the focus of the investigation in California, the case control event investigation hopefully you heard about. On Monday, 1,000 cases, 3,000 controls looking at effectiveness and effectiveness over time of the fifth dose. So this is just the vaccine effectiveness of the fifth dose relative to zero doses. Preliminary data, of course, from California, about 85.9%. Confidence limits 75.6 to 91.9. And then in certain cases, so if you receive four doses, but the fourth after your fourth birthday, that is up to date. And so four doses with the fourth after your fourth birthday relative to zero doses is 80.4% effective. And then the question, a big question, is waning immunity. Is your duration of protection from your childhood series not what we expect? This is not yet time since vaccination, but it is age-stratified vaccine effectiveness estimates in that 4 to 10-year-old age group. And so in the youngest, in 4 through 5-year-olds, 94% effective, 6 through 7, 85% effective, and 8 through 10, 81% effective. So some suggestion of a modest waning of immunity as expected. So what does that mean? So what do I take from the California effectiveness data? Well, I take that we should be reassured that DTaP is working well. The data are consistent with the pre-licensure trials. They're consistent with the paper published from CDC looking at cases occurring in 1998 through 2001, early implementation of DTaP and compared to whole cell that showed good vaccine effectiveness in the short term, and I think we're seeing appropriate vaccine effectiveness in the intermediate term. Much has been made, certainly in the popular press, about new strains of pertussis, and probably more specifically, the vaccine antigens present in the circulating strains have changed over time. And we've seen that in the U.S., certainly. But the strain changes haven't really correlated with the big changes that we've seen in occurrence of pertussis. And then where the rubber hits the road in the field, the vaccines remain effective. I think also it tells me that the adolescent booster dose is timed pretty well. I think 11 and 12-year-old preferred age makes sense given even a modest waning of immunity. I sort of said that the pertussis outbreak is pertussis. There's also been much about both false positive PCR results or the tendency of the PCR assays used to produce false positive results. There was a nice session this morning. There have been some notable pseudo-outbreaks. Many of you, I think, are wrestling with certain clinics or places where testing seems to be applied indiscriminately, leading to false positives. But in the whole, I think the majority of the cases reported were actually pertussis because the vaccines are effective, and if it wasn't pertussis, they wouldn't be effective at preventing it. And similarly, there is Bordetella parapertussis. There are other species, but they also are not protected by the vaccine, and so I think the contribution of those to the total burden of disease is probably minimal. And then I think, too, an indirect message is that the vaccine program, of course, remains strong and it remains effective. It was actually quite hard to find zero-dose recipients in the case-control study in California. This outbreak in California and the increase in disease is not a failure to vaccinate. But it doesn't really explain what's going on. So certainly 85% effectiveness among 4 through 10-year-olds leaves 15% who are vaccinated but susceptible, not protected. And that's enough. Increasing incidence in that age group is enough to produce a large burden of disease, but it doesn't explain why this increase was so dramatic. We're better at recognizing and confirming pertussis and diagnosing and reporting pertussis, but that probably doesn't explain why the notable age differences in incidence. I can't get my head around differential recognition in certain age groups as the explanation for what's going on. There is, of course, real evidence for increasing transmission from antibody studies in populations that suggest that people are more likely to have recent infection in recent years than compared to previously. Could differential transmission patterns be accounting for the increase in incidence? Maybe, but there's actually little evidence of a reservoir of transmission. So gets back to Steve's point that we fixed a lot of adolescent disease with an adolescent Tdap dose, but we don't see a a herd effect. We don't see a reduction in transmission in other age groups. And in fact, there's pretty good evidence that if you're seven, you get pertussis from other seven-year-olds probably, and so there's not likely a reservoir of transmission. And then finally, are we seeing changes that are small but impactful in waning of vaccine-induced immunity or naturally acquired immunity? Unclear, and I think hopefully we'll have more to talk to you about next time. That's why we pushed NIC back 2 years. So what do we do? So, one of our mantras in the office is no child should die of pertussis. Cocooning implementation certainly is challenging. That's our current recommended prevention strategy. I've been actually encouraged from this meeting that many of you are overcoming the challenges and you're actually implementing cocooning programs at a large scale. So we've always been concerned that the scaling up of this kind of strategy is difficult. But I think the one lesson I've taken from you is that you can do it, but it requires a champion. It requires somebody out there on the forefront really wanting to do this. And then we don't know if cocooning is an effective strategy, and so we're embarking on a case control study evaluating the effectiveness of cocooning that many of you are participating in. And then finally, ACIP is now deliberating, revisiting the question of maternal vaccination and whether or not there will be a recommendation or perhaps more permissive language around maternal immunization or vaccination during pregnancy. Will be discussed again at the June ACIP. And then I think it's clear, again, because there's little evidence of a herd effect, that we need lifespan protection for pertussis. And so we're beginning to edge there in the ACIP activities, both with off-label indications for persons 65 and over for cocooning, permissive recommendations for use of vaccines in that age group, and hopefully moving towards getting a licensed vaccine in that age group. There's also an ACIP indication for any children who are under-immunized, who happen to be 7 to 10 years old, to receive one dose of Tdap in their catch-up schedule, because that's a window without a licensed product for vaccination. And then, of course, I think in the near future, the ACIP working group will be considering repeat vaccination with Tdap. And, you know, just to remind you, you probably don't need reminding, but each decade since the 1980s, we've seen more deaths from pertussis reported. So there really is a sense of urgency at reversing this trend. So what's coming? I don't know. Watch this space. The 7 to 10-year-old age group in the orange there is sort of flattened off. The one that has me nervous is the 1 to 5-year-olds, 1 to 6-year-olds. That seems to be increasing. A couple of states, I think, have seen actually their second highest incidence in that age group, so that may be the next challenge. And then I guess just to close, it's not all doom and gloom around the office. I think I understand what it's like to work in influenza, actually, after this past year with such a sense of urgency about getting people vaccinated. So this is a vaccination campaign occurring at Dragon Con in Atlanta last fall. Bonus points if you can recognize the movie where these characters are from. All right, so thank you, and any questions, I'm happy to answer.
So do we have any questions? I'm sure there's lots of questions and thoughts about this continually challenging disease. Raphael?
Thanks, Tom. Can you say anything about whether disease in vaccinees is modified and how so in the 7-year-old group? And that's one question. The second question is there anything from the international arena that can inform what's going on in the United States?
Yeah. Does this work? Yeah. So. The vaccines protect very well against typical pertussis. So the studying them is made complicated by case definitions, of course, but it's worth remembering that in the pre-vaccine era, it wasn't just infants who died of pertussis. At first infection, you got severe pertussis, and there was a risk of death even in older children. And so there is attenuation of disease, and the advent of PCR and other diagnostics probably contributes to recognition. There's less evidence that the vaccines really impact transmission, and so thinking forward, having vaccines that really have an effect on transmission as well as protecting individuals from severe disease, I think would be helpful. There's not much directly relevant from other countries, although Australia has an incidence 10 times higher than ours and has actually seen, I think, some of that same emergence in 7 to 10-year-olds recently, but I haven't heard estimates of vaccine effectiveness. From there, I would expect to soon. They have better coverage data for a screening approach to vaccine effectiveness, I think. There are not a lot of places with the same schedule and the same, same everything else as we do, so it's hard to, there's no exact parallel.
Greg.
Greg Armstrong from CDC. You showed some data showing that the number of deaths was increasing by each decade for the last few decades. Could you comment on the characteristics of those deaths, what age groups those are occurring in, if you have any data on vaccination status?
Yeah, something like 75% of the deaths are under 4 months of age, so most are unvaccinated or undervaccinated. And in fact, most too young to receive their first dose. We have some evidence that one dose is protective against death, and so there is some discussion of the first dose slightly earlier, so 6 weeks rather than 2 months. I mean, it complicates the rest of the schedule, plus the impact of that small shift is maybe not so great, and so I don't think there's a programmatic way to address that. It's the reason cocooning is the strategy to sort of reduce transmission to kids too young to be vaccinated. But at least we feel that if there's evidence that one dose protects against death, that means antibodies protect against death, and that sort of lends credence to a maternal vaccination program. Other places have tried a birth dose of an AP vaccine. They're immunogenic, but the clinical outcomes, because they're sort of so rare, which is the real question, is hard to look at. So I don't know that we'll get to a birth dose quickly.
Some of the data presented at this meeting, especially the vaccine effectiveness in this age group, is, I guess, the first that's come out since a big study in the early 2000s. Do you have plans, or what are your plans, to further evaluate effectiveness of both DTaP and Tdap to get a better handle on whether or how much waning immunity may be a key factor in the resurgence or lower efficacy of DTaPs, and if this increase in 1 to 6-year-olds is real?
So a lot of the questions I raised are, of course, our priority focus areas for our work. And so further analyzing the California data to really look at time since receipt of fifth dose and duration of protection. And then similarly, we're working with Minnesota and trying with some other states to combine vaccine registry information with surveillance data to try to kind of confirm the results. So also look at duration of the fifth.